Hello.
Again, we talk about structure, but we never managed to get the intro right.
I've been preparing that one for a while, though. Hello and welcome to, probably the last episode of the year, depending on when we managed to upload it. And to part one of our full Formula One season recap.
Yeah, so I think the first sort of prepared episode we ever have done.
Time I've taken notes. I know you've taken notes once before.
Yes, in an interview where we had a guest on. Yeah. I think I was preparing some questions based off Cigar Club's newest album that they had released, kind of going through the songs. But this was a bit more work, as it was more than a 40-minute album, rather 23 races that we're going through. And we will be taking you through the first, about half of the season. Not quite, but the first 10 races of what we kind of had talked about.
Yeah.
For this first part. But before we get into all that, Toby, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
How was your, weekend, I guess?
Oh, I mean, it was very nice. I arrived from Maastricht after finishing up work there. And then we immediately went out to I arrived home and no one was here. I was like, oh, okay. And we immediately went to the Christmas market, Scott and some friends and I, and got pretty wrecked that night. So that was nice.
I only recall having a beer or two.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. This is on recall. Yeah. So the Christmas times were nice. I think for the 15th year in a row or so, have not had a snowy Christmas here in Bonn, Germany. But we had a good time with friends. We managed to meet up a few times and also with some old friends we hadn't seen in a while. So overall, the Christmas spirit was there. And I think even in these hard times, it was a nice, nice moment between all families and everything.
Yeah.
So good times.
But let's, speaking of time, let's rewind time back a bit pretty much almost a year ago, a bit longer, because we're going to be starting the season review where pretty much the season started, which is the end of the previous season, the end of the 2020 season, and the testing in Barcelona. And coming out of last season with Mercedes's perhaps strongest ever car, and going into a slight rules change. And, you know, we knew it, but people were going to be shaken up and we knew the order was going to perhaps change a bit. But also Red Bull had managed to win at Abu Dhabi in 2020. And mind you, you know, that was just after Lewis Hamilton had COVID. And they weren't fighting for anything anymore. But still, that was the first time in the turbo hybrid era where Mercedes hadn't won Abu Dhabi. And that was a big deal. And then we go into preseason testing in March. And we start seeing a few patterns. We start seeing that the new aero regulations have actually impacted people or teams more than we thought. And it seemed to be favoring, and this is preseason testing, so no one was really certain how much people were sandbagging and how much people were really showing. But we were seeing some interesting pace off of the high rake concept cars, which is essentially the Red Bull cars. Ferrari being a bit more high rake than low rake, and then low rake being pretty much the Mercedes engine cars. McLaren being a noticeable outlier here with a slightly more high rake car than the other Mercedes engine cars, if I believe. Rake being the angle between the front and the rear tires, essentially. So the angle the car is set at. And as you can imagine, if you have a more acute angle there, then you're going to be generating less downforce. Whereas if you have a larger angle, you're going to be more of an arrow tip in the wind. So you're going to be generating a bit more downforce.
Yeah, so essentially the volume of air that fits under the car when it's resting. And that slant is... what was interesting going off that is based off Abu Dhabi, which was the last race of the season last season, was that, okay, is it possible that Red Bull could be closing this gap? And in testing, that with the new regulations, it seemed like the gap was closing, to say the very least. And that they would be a little bit closer, but I think you have a couple more deets on that.
Yeah, it was fun because both Mercedes and Red Bull were kind of, they weren't counting their horses or whatever the saying is just yet. They were staying really relatively quiet about it. What we did see was the daughter teams or the customer teams. They were more adamant. So we saw AlphaTauri suddenly being quite strong. We saw the famously pink, now green Mercedes, the newly rebranded Aston Martin, being much slower than anyone expected. Which, you know, you could put down to, okay, they were moving away from the Mercedes concept towards their own. But, you know, they were also the first ones to scream after, or to say that the new regulations were disproportionately impacting the low-rate cars. And so we were coming out of season testing with a few winners, apparently. We saw Red Bull being strong. We saw Mercedes be strong, but weakened relative to Red Bull. We saw Aston Martin, for who a lot of people had a lot of high hopes, struggle very much. We saw Alfa Romeo be quite slow again. And we saw, interestingly, we saw Williams make a bit of a step. Now, Williams, and we'll get back to this in Imola, Williams, before the season, now under new ownership, had said that they're building a peaky car. What that means is they're building a car that suits certain tracks and certain circumstances a lot more than others. So they're willingly sacrificing some races in favor of others so that they can fight for points in certain races, which was really interesting. And we'll get back into it.
As a good point to reflect on at the end of our long review. That'll be a nice one to look at.
And we saw McLaren show strong pace, and we saw Ferrari, who I was at least expecting to show another, quite frankly, pretty shit year, also as the one they had the year before, suddenly look not as bad. And
they look like they were not just focused on the next season, at least from the testing standpoint. I thought they were just going to throw this year away, similar to what Haas had said to that extent. Not maybe to that extent, but that's what I was expecting. So good on them.
Which, that was really interesting. And then the last team I want to talk about is the at that point, newly rebranded Alpine, formerly Renault team, who was bringing Fernando Alonso back. And that brings us into the last kind of point, is we had four major people changing teams. We had Carlos Sainz going to Ferrari, Daniel Ricciardo going to McLaren, Fernando Alonso going to Alpine, coming back out of retirement. And we saw Sebastian Vettel go from Ferrari to Aston Martin.
In addition to that, we want to add three rookies that had lined up. So Tsunoda for AlphaTauri joined Gasly, which isn't a driver switch per se, but you know, new to the team at least. So that same acclimatization has to take place, as well as both Haas drivers were rookies, Schumacher and Mazepin. I almost said Spin, pardon me.
You did say Spin.
Mazepin, my bad. It's the letters, you know. It has nothing to do with the driving.
Well, we'll get into race one in a second.
Well, don't lap one. So maybe the next step from that is, okay, we have a slight image, at least, of what the cars look like with the new regulations from the testing, and we know that the drivers have switched and what the lineups look like, but expectations were still kind of hard to make at that point, because you've only seen a couple days of testing and you know what the previous hierarchy was essentially in the teams. So personally, from my own like fan expectation, and you know, reading the various media outlets as well as watching testing and last season as well, I was still pretty certain that it would be Mercedes and Red Bull battling it out, because they've been by far the two most, Ferrari's been a very good team in this hybrid era, you could argue, but Red Bull and Mercedes have been the two top ones, especially coming out of 2020, going into 2021. So I expected Mercedes to be number one, because I didn't think the changes in the regulations were that huge, and it didn't seem that Mercedes had taken that much effort to make huge changes. They basically kept the same car to the most part. So I had those one and two, Mercedes going number one. I predicted Ferrari would get third, based off mostly testing, and that I then thought, okay, they're not throwing this away. That's nice. I was very, very, I thought throughout the season that would definitely not happen, especially throughout the first half of the season. And basically I put third as well, McLaren. I thought there would be some form of battle. Based off AlphaTauri's testing, I figured they might have a realistic chance for fifth. So I actually put them fifth and predicted them that way. And I had Aston Martin sixth, because I thought they were going to challenge, but you know, Vettel coming in, he did not have a good last year at Ferrari. And switching teams is never easy. So I thought six would be good, a good position for them to end up. And I had Williams over the Haas and Alpha and eighth. Haas last just because they announced they weren't going to plan on doing any real,
yeah,
you know, they were just focusing on next year. So they were clear-cut favorite to finish dead last for me. that was essentially my order. What do you have any comments to that? Were your expectations a little different?
Honestly, I think you were pretty spot on. I would have probably put Ferrari in fifth and then Alpha and would have put I would have said Red Bull, Mercedes, McLaren. Then I would have put Aston Martin because I was expecting quite a lot of them.
Interesting, yeah.
Would have put Alpha Tauri next, then Ferrari, then Alpine, then Williams, then Alpha, then Haas.
So Williams' announcement was enough for you to think they were going to beat Alpha, essentially.
It was less me believing in Williams and more me not believing in Alpha.
Oh, okay. That's fair. That's fair.
Alfa Romeo or Frederic Passeur or any of their drivers. I just, in the past few years, there has always been this hype about Alfa Romeo in preseason testing. And I bought into it a couple of years. And so this year I was like, you know what? No, this isn't going to happen.
Jesus aside, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Interesting. So you would have had Aston a lot higher up.
I was really expecting Aston to, I wasn't expecting Mercedes to get it to be affected by the regulations as much. I was expecting Red Bull to make a huge jump and Mercedes giving up on the season and that being their downfall rather than Red Bull kind of being given an advantage through getting the regulations more right. And then Mercedes Absolutely. Losing out on it a bit.
So another thing, what made me predict Alpine being sixth, I think I said, was basically Alonso, but like not in a bad way. More, he had been out for 2 years, and I think he's 40 years old coming back in, or close to 40 or around 40. I figured you're going to need a few months just to get used to this again. That's kind of why I thought they would have less of a challenge for fifth in that sense. So I thought sixth was a good prediction there. But I guess we'll see how that goes without wanting to spoiler too much of what we're going to talk about later on. So I guess we'll head over into Bahrain.
Yes, Bahrain. Oh, okay. Oh, this was fun.
Starting off with the warm-up lap, unless you want to get into qualifying first.
No, I want to say, just going back in time and imagining or reliving the emotions that I felt at the time, you know, I was so hyped. I was so ready for the Bahrain Grand Prix. I was so excited to see it. And honestly, and this is kind of a theme with this season didn't really disappoint at any point. There wasn't a race where I go back and I think, okay, well, you know, I wasn't looking forward to this race. And it turned out that I was right and it was pretty shit. And similar to that, Bahrain proved to be an incredibly entertaining race.
Man, absolutely. And with the pressure of it, being the first race of an hopefully exciting season, you know, there's a lot riding on it too, to make a good entrance.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of good entrances, Verstappen gets pole, strong start ahead of Hamilton, ahead of Bottas. The race start, front gets away clean, except for what happens in turn two?
In turn two, Mazepin, or Spin, I guess we call it. Is that turn two?
That is turn two, yeah.
Yeah, so I titled this race The Rise of Mazepin, which is pretty unfair, to be honest, because he's getting used to a very tricky car to drive. And we see this, especially in the first few races, that the Haas drivers struggled with the car.
Yeah.
And over the progress of the season, I'm going to ascribe it more to that than anything else, really. But he just, I think he was a bit eager on the throttle and ended up donutting and was out of the race. And, you know, slid off. And then the race continued, but continued to be very, very entertaining. Before the race even started, we already had an abnormality where Perez's engine just absolutely shut down and he had to wait, essentially. So he started from the pits, I'm pretty sure, in that race.
Yep. That was unusual. That was Perez. I don't know. I mean, good on him that he got the car running again and could start from the pits. And mind you, he did make a great recovery from 20th to 5th in that race. for me, the most interesting thing, Scott, are you there?
I'm there.
You're there. Okay. For me, the most interesting thing during the early stages of that race, though, was that after a clean getaway, Hamilton was pressurizing Verstappen quite a lot. But the Red Bull had the pace in hand to actually defend, which, you know, a couple of years ago, I don't think that would have happened. I think, you know, you have a good start, you get away, and then the Mercedes starts putting on the pressure, and you just lose out. You get overtaken on the straights, wherever, it doesn't matter. But Verstappen actually had the pace to defend on track, which led us to Mercedes calling the undercut, pitting first, and then, gaining track position, essentially gaining track position in the end when Verstappen pits.
Couple of other highlights from that race. I mean, yeah, so the 1-2 was, it was a good battle to open up the season. And just going back again, like watching the videos and the highlights of the races, going back to the beginning of the season and kind of trying to forget about everything that's happened in the last 12 months, essentially, it was so much fun. I got excited just like rewatching Bahrain. It was funner just to build up the hype. And there was so many good like on-track battles, so much hard racing going on that it was amazing, even like further down the grid. Norris and Leclerc had an amazing battle through, I think, 4 or 5 corners. And Norris eventually overtook Leclerc, starting off very well into the season for McLaren and for him. And then there was a great passage, which I don't think you see very often, where Vettel was about to be overtaken by Alonso and Sainz. And that did happen, but in that long straight that followed the corner, essentially Vettel and Sainz both overtook Alonso. So it was almost 3 wide for quite a while. Very exciting racing to watch. Sadly for Vettel though, he ended up colliding with Ocon at some point. And that kind of ruined his race.
Yeah.
But it was a very close finish between Hamilton and Verstappen.
Yeah. Let's get back into that.
Yeah.
So Mercedes gains track position over Red Bull with the undercuts. And then it's essentially up to Verstappen to catch up to Hamilton and overtake him on track. And we see for the first time this season, but not the last, a controversial overtake. Verstappen overtakes, but leaves the track in doing so and has to give the position back to Hamilton. And keeping in mind the last few races of the season, you know, this is something we're going to continue seeing more often. And then similarly to how the Red Bull had the pace to defend from the Mercedes had the pace to defend from the Red Bull. So we were seeing two very evenly matched cars in this opening race, which I think by the end of the season became a bit overshadowed. I think we all remember Red Bull being superior towards the beginning of the season and then Mercedes being superior towards the end. But it was really much closer to Mercedes being equal to Red Bull in the beginning. And then as we continue on in the races, Red Bull hits a stride at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially going into the 2 Austrian Grand Prix. But we'll talk about that later. Anyway, it ended up with 0.7 second difference between Hamilton and Verstappen. So very, very close. And looking at other races, along this season, that has been probably one of the closest winning margins, period. So great opening race. Hamilton has the lead over Verstappen. Let's see the general finish. Hamilton P1, Verstappen second, Bottas finished third. He had a solid race. Norris got fourth, so great start for McLaren season. Perez finished fifth, which I thought was solid, especially like you just said, coming out of the pits at the beginning.
Yeah.
And, you know, first race with a new team, so very promising start. Leclerc got P6. Daniel Ricciardo, or what did he call himself in an interview? I'm the DRICC. He got P7 and Sainz finished P8, Tsunoda 9 and Stroll finishing out the points finishes with 10th. There was 4 DNFs, Gasly, Latifi, Alonso, Mazepin. Anything else you want to add to that race? We don't need to do championship points because it's the same as the race order.
Yeah. The interesting point, one thing I want to mention is Bahrain is also roughly when there's a lot of George Russell hype, especially throughout the first half of the season until he got his Mercedes seat confirmed. And it sort of started here with him fighting Raikkonen for 10th position at some point. Nothing major, nothing came of it, but just wanting to mention that.
Good story Russell, to follow throughout.
Yeah, Russell is a highly appreciated driver. And this was kind of the beginning of his bid for the Mercedes seat. But we moved to Imola, second race, a track that had only come back to Formula One the year before during COVID and was now highly anticipated. And before we get into anything, I want to talk about, I vividly remember Yuki Tsunoda's his barrage of comments starting in Imola, where he starts shouting at other people, like, oh, what the fuck is going on? You know, is this driver's school? As someone cuts him off or something like that. And that'd be something to be continued. And, you know,
very entertaining.
After a very strong finish in Bahrain, this is kind of where his, at least I feel his kind of insecurity about the situation he finds himself comes in. And then after the first race, his rookie season wasn't that impressive until the later stages of the season.
Of the season.
And a lot of shouting and a lot of anger was directed towards other drivers, I feel. Maybe that had something to do with the way his season went.
Well, with Yuki, the thing was too, him coming in, I mean, he did really well in the juniors, and especially the British media loved him coming in and just loved to make, they were hyping him up to that, you know, they were thinking he was going to be right on Gasly's level. So with Tsunoda going through that, we get to the first rain race of the season. And
what a fucking race it was. Geez.
What a race it was. Unbelievable. I think you have some notes on qualifying there. If not, we continue right into the race because I did not.
Yeah. So,
okay.
No, I have some notes on qualifying. Interestingly, so this was kind of the beginning of Russell's bid for Q2 and Q3, as both him and Latifi made it into Q2 here. Norris had an incredibly strong Q3 performance, almost made it into second place, but had his lap deleted. Both Sainz and Ricciardo were weaker than their teammates in this qualifying, something that only really continued for one of them. And Williams was kind of also having high hopes for Imola, as I understood, because as we'll get to later in the race, there was an incident where Russell was fighting for 10th. But also, additionally, Perez, for the first time and for one of the few times, out-qualifies Verstappen in this qualifying. Notably, the qualifying is not wet.
Yeah, so we get to the race.
Yeah.
And
First corner.
First lap, first corner. We have a very aggressive Max out of the gate with a good start, but unyielding as ever. A comment that was repeated by the commentators, which I felt was worth pointing out, was Max has razor blades on his elbows.
Yeah.
And it's very fitting in this corner as well, because essentially he, makes Hamilton, not makes him, but very hard racing, and Hamilton ends up damaging part of his car. Maybe you want to take over on that part.
Yeah, I have one thing to add here, which is a bit of perspective, which I thought was really interesting, because towards the end of the season, we start seeing Max Verstappen pull these moves where he launches it into the inside line and then kind of is slow to rotate the car and kind of takes a wide line out of the corner. And people are saying, oh, well, he's doing this because he knows that if him and Hamilton crash, Hamilton loses more. Now, going back to Imola, second race of the season, first corner, he makes pretty much exactly the same move. And I thought that was quite a bit of interesting perspective of the fact that this is kind of just his, or this seems to be just kind of one of the moves that Verstappen favors, one of the moves that he likes, is running the car into a corner and then making it difficult for his opponent to kind of maintain the space.
Yeah.
And maybe rather than Verstappen learning this move towards the end of the season, the person who actually learned is Hamilton, who learned how to react to these moves, which is go off track or make it so that someone is pushed off track, and then make Max have to give him the position back, you know, not react, let Max overextend himself, don't bite into the bait, or so that either he or Verstappen have to go off track.
And there is
something, then Verstappen has to give the position back. And that, I thought that was quite interesting, because this whole screaming and shouting for, oh, Verstappen wants to crash is, well, I don't think he wanted to crash in Imola. You know, I don't think he wanted to crash that early. It's just the way he raced.
Exactly. Exactly. And he has this, it's about him. And it's very interesting because this is something I was going to mention earlier. In the first race in Bahrain, Verstappen gives the position back to Hamilton. This general giving position back becomes a massive theme throughout the whole season. And at the end of the season, it seemed more like an option to give the position back rather than having to, or like it seemed like an obvious thing, because one of the things Hamilton seemed to learn was, okay, this happens, I'll just go wide and not necessarily give the position back. And that happened several times. So it's interesting how that progressed along the season. But Hamilton, I think, recovered very well from his beginning and continued to drive a very solid race, as did Verstappen through there. Verstappen ended up winning, I think, quite confidently and by quite a long mile as well. Yeah, but there was plenty of action by 22 seconds, but there was plenty of action going on behind. You had mentioned Russell earlier, and yeah, he was doing a really good job. And let me tell you, it wasn't like light rain or drizzle, like it was pouring and the track was flooded. And the visibility, especially from the driver's perspective, seemed near zero or negative. But he was in battle with Bottas. And I don't know what exactly happened here, because in that moment in time, I think Russell kind of snapped, emotionally speaking, in terms of how he communicated over the radio. But looking at the replay, it kind of seemed like they both didn't leave each other enough space. And because of the slippiness, it quickly went into Russell, or Bottas, I think, slightly hitting his rear left tire, and Russell basically cutting into the body of Bottas, with both of them effectively out. And it was a very high speed crash too. So, you know, first and foremost, glad they're okay. But the radio reactions were very entertaining afterwards.
Yeah, go on. Go on.
Maybe you, well, do you want me to repeat what was said on the radio?
I mean, no,
but. What does he think he's doing?
Yeah, exactly.
What the fuck? Beep. You can't even find the audio anywhere. Russell did get a little bit of slant for how he reacted, I think.
Yeah.
After that race, which I thought was fair. And maybe that shows a little side of his, you know, room to grow, you could say, in a positive sense, or immaturity. Similar to Tsunoda in that sense, that you kind of have to learn what to communicate and what not, and what to keep intact or not. Do you want to add anything to the Bottas-Russell incident?
Only that it happened just after Hamilton made an uncharacteristic mistake and outed himself in turn, six or seven. And went into the gravel, broke his front wing. And then just as he got back on the track, the two crashed and there was a safety car and he could pit safely under the safety car without losing too much time. And
which
then he recovered.
Very lucky. Mind you, I also watched some analysis on that, because he went way off the course. And if you really follow how he was driving, mm-hmm. he got slow in the gravel and he knew he was close to the wall. And he first tried to go left. And when he did that, when he tried to go left, he actually, you know, not smashed, but hit the barrier. That caused, you know, quite some concerns, like, oh, he's out of the race. Obviously, he's out of the race. He just, like, charged into the wall. But in F1 cars, it's quite difficult to engage the reverse gear. So he did that, and he reversed through the whole gravel patch in a straight line, which apparently is very, very difficult, because mm-hmm. if you put a tiny bit too much throttle on, you dig yourself deep, and the car just gets stuck and beached. So respect to Hamilton for just being able to pull out of there. I don't think every driver on the grid would have been able to do that or would have tried. But there's so much at stake, even from the second race on, in terms of the rivalry between Max and Hamilton, that every point counts. And then his teammate, maybe he did a good thing in terms of getting the safety car. We can think of conspiracy theories here.
Yeah, no way.
I doubt it. Yeah. I think it was just good luck. And the safety car really helped Hamilton there, getting some points.
Yeah.
Not just some points, but, 19 points in second place. I think also the fastest lap through that.
Did he get fastest lap?
Yeah, because 18 is, he got fastest lap.
He got fastest lap, okay.
Yeah. And who finished out the podium? Norris, of course, who continued his, impressive first race, very good action on a race-by-race basis, and he had a very solid race, finished third.
Yep.
Yeah, Leclerc 4, Sainz 5, DRICC finished 6th, Gasly 7th, Stroll 8th, Ocon 9th, and Alonso 10th, getting some points in his second race, I think. Well, he got a point because I don't think he got a points finish in the first race. No. What else happened? Perez at some point went spinning, and that was kind of a theme in this race because it's a wet race, so there's a lot less room for error. But yeah, Max won the race quite convincingly, and that was that.
Yeah, and the interesting thing then, you know, it's a race to either, so the championship is right up there in the air, but Hamilton with the fastest lap, I think, was ahead just on points. Yeah,
I have it here. One sec.
And I thought it was really interesting, you know, because people, or at least I remembered, you know, okay, so Verstappen had a really strong start to the season, but in the first four races, this is his only win.
Absolutely. Very interesting. But he's been consistent, and that was important point. So
yeah,
Hamilton's leading by a point, I think, going out of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, we continue to the next race.
And the next race was Portugal. Circuit del Algarve. I have no idea how to pronounce that properly, unfortunately. Yeah, I can only say Chuva Molho Tolos in Portuguese, and that's it.
The Portuguese Grand Prix. That's what we're going to call it.
The Portuguese Grand
Prix. Or the Heineken Portugal Grand Prix.
So, favorites going into this race were clearly Mercedes. We start the race by Hambot Verp. So Hamilton Bottas first up and ahead of Perez. Perez doesn't pull a good start. Didn't really pull a good start in Italy either. Nor did he, well, in Bahrain. Bahrain was Bahrain. But kind of showing, in hindsight, I think Perez, you know, he got a lot of shit from some people saying, okay, he can't keep up. I think he could keep up. It was just consistency that was lacking. You know, he'd be good in qualifying or the race. He'd get a good race start or not. He'd overtake or not. You know, it took him a while to learn to bring it all together.
Which is fair. When you think about it, Perez's previous experiences has never been in a top car. It's been more in like between, you know, 4 and 6, that kind of position, or 4 and 7. So he's probably more used to, you know, not caring too much about qualifying, but then getting it done on the race. Yeah. And I think that's been his previous experience a lot. So I think that was one of his biggest challenges, is the importance of both and learning to balance it in this season.
Yeah.
So, which I think we do see quite a bit of progress towards the end of the season.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, 1-2 Merck pole, dominant in qualifying. And that was a fairly straightforward race. I didn't put down massive things apart from the fact that Verstappen at the end tried to take the fastest lap, and by a hair, he had it, but by a hair, he went off track and it got deleted. So that one extra point he was not given.
Yeah. I wrote down a few things that I found interesting, which is Ricardo didn't have a strong race. While I thought he was relatively strong in Imola towards the end, or at least in the first half of the race. And he didn't do too shabbily in Bahrain. He really didn't have a strong race here. Verstappen actually overtakes the Mercedes at the start, but then a restart happens, or a Verstappen overtakes them at the restart, I should say, rather. But is re-overtaken by I'm going about this wrong. Bottas leads the race. There's a restart. Bottas is ahead of Hamilton. Verstappen overtakes Hamilton.
Team order.
You know what? I think I'm getting this wrong.
No, Bottas was leading, and Hamilton was Verstappen was second, and Verstappen passed Bottas, and Hamilton then passed Bottas.
Hamilton
as well.
Passed Bottas.
They switched, and then Hamilton had way too much pace, and eventually got Verstappen.
Yeah, Hamilton overtook Verstappen on track, and then something went wrong in the pits for Verstappen pit, something went wrong in the pits for Bottas, or Bottas coming out of the pits lost some time, and then Verstappen overtook Bottas again on track. Anyways, what I'm trying to say is Verstappen could fight the Mercedes but couldn't fight Hamilton in the Mercedes. Let's put it that way.
That's a good conclusion to this race, because yeah, it finished a 1-2-3 with Verstappen sandwiched by the Mercedes.
Yeah, and that's really what that's really only what I wanted to get at.
Perez, even though he slipped, managed to get fourth in that chaos, which I want to give a shout out to. So again, he's showed up fairly well in his first three races, mm-hmm. although the second one was not so good, to be honest. I don't actually know why he fell in Imola that far. He was out of the points there too. But in this race in Portugal, Norris finished P5, Leclerc P6, Ocon 7, Alonso 8, Ricciardo 9. As he said, you know, his last two race results were 6 and 7, so now he's dropping off a bit more. And Gasly finished P10 to round that out. I think after three races now, it's worth looking at the championship standings. See, I have them here. So Hamilton was leading with 69 total points, followed by Verstappen with 61. Yeah, I know, right? Hamilton should have stopped there and just retired. It would have been fine, right? It would have been great. He would have won. Like, I think he would have been the champion of the hearts, at least. And he would have saved himself a lot of stress throughout the season. P3 in that moment in the Drivers' Championships, Norris with 37 points. Great first three races for him. Absolutely smashing it. You know, with one tricky rain race in those two, but you can already see there is a massive gap. There's a 32-point gap between Hamilton in first and Norris in third. So Verstappen and Hamilton are already pulling away after three races. Bottas in P4 with 32 points, so 5 points off Norris. And 4 points below him is Charles Leclerc, the first Ferrari, at 28. Perez in sixth at that time with 22 points. Because he had a no-point finish, essentially, that cost him to keep that gap close with Bottas at the beginning. And then we have Ricciardo, Sainz, Ocon, and Gasly rounding out the top 10. Yeah, the rest really aren't worth mentioning, I guess. The only other thing I had noted down for this race was there was a really peculiar moment where I think Raikkonen realized he's getting a bit older. And he crashed into the back of his teammate. He wasn't even using DRS, and he was on the long finishing straight, and he just got the slipstream, and he basically waited too long before he pulled to the side to overtake and ended up trashing his whole front wing and was out of the race. And I thought that was kind of, you know, maybe that's where he made his decision to retire at the end of the season. I don't know. Just like, I'm getting a bit slow and this isn't fun anymore.
Do you think?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it came a bit later when he kept being incessantly asked by the media about it.
That could be too. Although they did do a video interview thing that, like, the predictions for the season of all drivers. And on that thing, Raikkonen had already written down that his last race will be Abu Dhabi. So I don't know when they filled that out. They released it like a week or two ago. So he knew it for quite some time. I don't know exactly when, but I guess we'll see. Because he also tangled with a good old buddy of his afterwards or later on in a different race, but I guess we'll get to that soon.
Next we move to Spain, a track every team knows a lot about because it's where preseason testing is held, and also a track where we very much expect Mercedes to be the powerhouse again, as they have been in the past years. Now here we see something interesting. We see Hamilton, Verstappen, Bottas on the starting grid, and Verstappen actually overtaking Hamilton into the first corner or after the start. And the move was clean. There was no major incident, but it was harsh. It was a strong move. And again, kind of feeding into this, okay, Verstappen has been fighting the way he did towards the end of the season, the entire season, and it's Hamilton who's gotten better at letting him, at you know, interacting with it rather than, you know, being bullied by Verstappen a bit into, mind you, I say bullied in a clean manner, in a fair manner, that is within the racing realms. Perez again had a poor start, and then Hamilton was closing on Verstappen and actually making up a lot of time while Ferrari is proving to be quite strong.
Absolutely. The one thing that I kind of have noted down is maybe an indicator to take away from this race, especially in the top two battle, this race seemed like the start of the Masi Toto Horner triangle.
Yes, 100%.
Because after that massively impressive overtake, I might add, like, it was very, very like exciting to watch, and it just seemed very well done by Max, like right on the edge, but on the edge, not over the edge. Again, the razor blades on elbows comment was made here too. So we see later on that I think Mazepin was about to be lapped by Hamilton, and you know, he's still quite a ways away from him, and there's a little bit of stuff going on, but Toto immediately feels the need to call Massey, the race director, to basically say, come on, Toto, blue flags, we need to get through, he's going to cost us the win. Massey is who he's talking to. But it seemed like they were on the same team the way he was talking to him, which I thought was very interesting. So the manipulation began there. That's kind of what I noted down as the theme. Another very interesting thing, which kind of, especially in the first half of the year, came across quite often, actually, I thought, was Bottas was hesitant sometimes to be that completely complicit number two.
Yeah.
And this happened in this race as well, where he got the order to switch with Hamilton, which he didn't not do. He just also re-overtook Hamilton.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, you know, technically you did it right, but, you know, you achieved it in a wrong way. So I thought that kind of maybe was the first crack in their, like, team a little bit, and maybe what also led to Bottas being strongly considered to, or strongly reconsidered if they should bring him back or not. Looking at the summer break and all the craziness of the driver swaps and the announcements that were made, where we now know that Russell took his place. So maybe from then on, they were like, oh, you know, maybe we'll just, you know, and they've been watching Russell for ages, but maybe they felt like from that moment on, now this might be the time where maybe this year we'll announce it. Apart from that, in the Spain GP, Hamilton finished first. Do you want to maybe get into how that happened? Could based off Verstappen having done the nice overtake?
Yeah. Let's quickly just call it the fact that Mercedes committed to a two-stop, forcing Red Bull to commit to a one-stop, because it was in such a window that Hamilton's outlap would have likely carried him ahead of Verstappen had Verstappen pitted. And then on the same tire, Red Bull wasn't as confident that they could re-overtake Hamilton. So they left Verstappen out there for a long time, and Hamilton was catching up at a good chunk of a second every lap. Lost some time to Bottas, but eventually, and that's also where the Mercedes, where the Toto Wolff shout came from, because I think Hamilton was overtaking, was lapping Mazepin or someone like that, and then Wolff shouts, oh, he's costing us the race to Massey, blue flag him.
Which he did. And, no, he didn't, yeah. Because he got by in like 30 seconds. It took him five more. It was unnecessary.
But eventually on much comparatively fresher tires, Hamilton has no issue overtaking Verstappen cleanly on track. And then Verstappen in the end, I believe, actually pits and gets the fastest lap, but then loses it, as you said. Yeah, exactly. That was that. You already mentioned that.
No, that was last race.
That was last race?
Yeah. Verstappen got the fastest lap this race. And exactly as you said, because they had a large gap to Bottas, because again, these two drivers are just tearing it away from the field. It's been the theme for the, apart from, no, even in the first race, their gap between them was small, but they just, within the first three corners in most races, they're gone. There's no chance for the rest, and it's amazing. And Leclerc finished fourth behind Bottas, who was third. But again, the gap between Bottas and Verstappen was, over 10 seconds, with Verstappen having done an extra pit to get the fastest lap. So it really shows how big that margin is. Perez topped out the top five. Ricciardo finished sixth. So that was, a solid race, considering that McLaren was, their goal was third. So sixth is not a bad finish. That's kind
of Ricciardo ahead of Norris was quite impressive.
Exactly. So not impressive, but meeting expectations. Right. Because at the beginning of the season, people were like, okay, Norris is young and he's been with the team, but you know, Ricciardo has won seven races. So we expect him to, you know, not wipe the floor, but you know, be the clear number one.
Yeah. Which, what we did see was Sainz being consistently strong though.
Absolutely. Again, another P7 finish.
Stronger than the other team swappers.
Absolutely. Yeah, he came into that, but like he did a lot of extra things prior to the season even starting. Like he moved right to the factory and Ferrari, really got to know the team, and kind of it seemed like he embedded himself into not just Ferrari culture, but like Italian culture. And I think as a Spanish person, that's not the easiest thing to do. So massive respect to him, because he seemed to like he gave up everything in order to make sure that it fit. And I really appreciated that sacrifice. So Norris got 8th, Ocon 9th, and Gasly 10th. Again, we don't have Tsunoda on here. We haven't mentioned him since the first race, essentially. Tsunoda ended up finishing, well, DNF. He was the only car that didn't finish. And I honestly don't remember why, because there was so many Tsunoda spins and accidents that looked similar. So they're kind of all washed into one. So no slight on Tsunoda, but he just, as you said previously, where he was kind of yelling a little bit, maybe someone told him to calm it down a little, and then his confidence was a little affected. And it seemed that carried through to, or at least for a few races. Going into the driver standings after Spain, Hamilton was still in the lead, having added another win. So 94 points, Verstappen in second at 80. Now we see the big cut. Valtteri Bottas in third with 47 points. He had overtaken Norris, who is now in fourth with 41 points. And Leclerc of Ferrari is fifth with 40 points. So there's three drivers within 7 points of each other. Very exciting. I didn't actually pull up the constructors race by race. I don't know if you by chance have access to that on your side right now.
No, but
that
I'm would be sure an
interesting thing to look at.
It would make sense at this point that it's Mercedes, Red Bull, McLaren, Ferrari, and then probably Alpine, I want to say, at this point, in fifth.
Yes.
Because they had a better start to the season than AlphaTauri.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyways. So I just want to mention here at this point, we're going into the fifth race, Monaco. We've gone through a lot of tracks that would have had Mercedes as favorites, but we were expecting to see Red Bull have a much stronger start to the season. But they didn't really. So Mercedes was ahead, and Hamilton was ahead 14 points, against someone who was his closest rival by far.
So the narrative is starting to be formed, and it's like, it's another, the eighth championship is basically there. That's what people are almost thinking.
And now we start moving into tracks that are quite heavily Red Bull favored. Starting with the famous Monaco. But I just want to point out, Mercedes start to the season was a lot stronger, or Hamilton start to the season was a lot stronger than I remembered. And B, that being said, Red Bull did take away as many points from, essentially as many points from Mercedes as they could, because Verstappen finished second when he didn't finish first.
So I think the theme of this, the reason the narrative wasn't full swung at Mercedes are going to win this, because they've been good in areas or in races where we didn't quite expect it of them based off testing. I think this is kind of where Hamilton has started to show that he's human in this season, where there's been small, tiny things. And the next two races are also, well, not so tiny, but, some things where the next Monaco and Baku were definitely his two worst races of the year. Unless I like the other crash with Verstappen, which we'll get to later, but I didn't think that was too bad. But those were probably his low points of the season, apart from the season finale. Where he kind of started showing just he also has error. And it was kind of nice to see, because every other season he's garnered so much hate for just driving perfect, which mad respect, drive perfect for 7 years like that. That's insane. Or six. And these next two races, well, we get into Monaco and we start with an interesting story out of qualifying. Leclerc got pulled.
A bit reminiscent of, don't let me lie, Monaco 2006, 2005, somewhere there. Leclerc in Q3 stuck it on pole in the first round of tries and then crashed, and no one else could set a time. And so he was meant to start the race on pole.
But his gearbox didn't work anymore.
Yep, his drive shaft or his crankshaft, or one of the two, gave out in the formation lap. And Leclerc ahead of Verstappen, ahead of Bottas, turned into Verstappen ahead of Bottas, ahead of whoever was in third at that point.
Which is an interesting tactic for qualifying, right? Just put up a great lap and then crash so that no one else can do it.
Yeah.
But make sure you can get your car fixed if you can control the damage.
The interesting thing here is this really started Ferrari's first stretch of
slide.
Wow power. I remember at the time thinking when the next few races were gone, wow, Ferrari really's got the speed in the slow tracks. It's just the engine they're lacking. They've got the aerodynamics figured out. And then eventually they got a new engine and also that figured out. And that's how they beat McLaren in the end, in my opinion. But yeah.
Well, and then, absolutely the new power unit changed as well as great driving, which another thing we didn't talk about beforehand, but a lot of people coming in were basically since Rosberg and Hamilton have been on a team, and before that. But since then, people have been looking for the next like big in-house team rivalry where drivers don't like each other and it's great for media. So 2016 was amazing for the media there when Rosberg took the title. But people were predicting that Ferrari had basically gotten two drivers that each definitely want to be number one driver and that there was going to be some friction there, which credit to the drivers, there was basically zero of. That we saw. But with, considering there's a lot of cameras in F1, I think they were a very good team. And they started off well. They were P6 and 7 coming out of Monaco. So they were right on target with their thing. But let's get into the race before we go into the points. The first thing that I realized when I watched the replay, I was like, okay, Leclerc isn't starting. And then I saw a white and orange car and it confused the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Like who's driving there? What is this? Is this like just to fill the space so they have 20 cars to make the circumstances right? Like I know the street circuit's tight, but what is one car more? That might be more fun and chaos. And it took me quite a while to realize, oh, the McLarens have a new look, which was so confusing to me.
Or had an old look rather.
Rather.
Gorgeous car.
Very nice, but very different to the papaya, which I had become quite a fan of, I might add. I like the color.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing I noted down about that race, which had nothing to do with the race. Maybe you take us into the start and how it began.
There's one more thing to mention in qualifying, which is that Hamilton only stuck it on sixth and then through Leclerc's DNF or did not start. Got awarded fifth position, I think. Really only exacerbating the issue of him having a really bad Monaco weekend. He starts from somewhere in the middle of the first 10. He doesn't improve. He loses two positions and finishes seventh with the fastest lap or something like that, and Verstappen winning the race, we don't have to talk about the Monaco race too much because not much happens. It's Verstappen, Vettel puts up a major drive. Verstappen has a controlled race win and Hamilton loses out. But Hamilton, and this is what I meant, when Hamilton was dominating, Verstappen got second whenever he didn't get first. Exactly. Now that Verstappen is ahead, Hamilton gets seventh. And then, next race is next race in Baku. But
18-point difference between the two after this race.
Yeah.
In this race of points gained.
Yeah, this is where Hamilton really loses out. So this is where he loses a big chunk of points at a time.
And the funny thing is, I didn't really understand. I mean, I know Monaco is hard to overtake, but I didn't quite understand why he wasn't even able to keep the position he was given from pole. Like, okay, bad start. But like that was weird to me because the whole race through, he was complaining. I can't get through. What is this? Everything sucks. And It was really odd to me, but finished seventh, got the fastest lap, Verstappen first. So Verstappen gained 18 points more, 18 points more than Hamilton did. Shout out to Sainz, who got second, his first pole for Ferrari in Monaco. That's a dream right there because it's one of the toughest tracks to drive on. Norris rounded out the podium. Go Norris, man. I think that was his second podium, if I'm not mistaken,
this season.
And sixth or fifth overall in his career. So great job there. Perez got fourth and Vettel, as he just said, got fifth with a very good drive in a super underperforming car.
Yeah.
As we see where all the other Mercedes cars are, Hamilton seventh. And did Bottas even? No, Bottas didn't even.
Bottas had his big tire mishap.
It was the gun. It was the wheel gun, right?
I think. Yeah. Yeah.
In the pit stop, he came in and he was, I think he was having a solid race too. He wasn't doing bad. But his front right tire, and that seems to be Mercedes' issue. It's always the front right, and the wheel gun just jammed and didn't get the tire off, and that ended up being the reason to completely retire the car, which I thought was really odd. Like, why not just send him out there? But I guess it's pointless.
Well, they couldn't change the tire. So he would have been, you're not allowed to be on three tires of one and then one.
Oh, that's a rule. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's fair then. It's also probably good for safety. Yeah. So coming out of Monaco.
We go to Azerbaijan, to Baku, which is the other major city.
Real quick, maybe just briefly scan over the points because Verstappen has now taken the championship lead coming out of this race. Talking about
4 points, yeah.
Exactly. So it's 105 to 101. Norris has retaken third through his great race back from Bottas, meaning three races in a row. They've swapped positions, which is really cool. So Norris 56, Bottas 47. Perez is closing the gap to Bottas, 44 points. Leclerc 40 and Sainz 38, close the gap to Leclerc. So very, very tight. And Ricciardo is in 24 at 24 points. So at this moment in time, I actually think that McLaren is ahead or one or 2 points behind Ferrari, which it set up a really cool battle and people were zooming in on it a lot that this was going to be quite a fight throughout the season. Ricciardo, 24 points, Gasly 16, Ocon 12. So now we go to Baku in Azerbaijan.
Yeah, which is where Ferrari shows once again that they're really strong in the city tracks. Because exactly. We start actually Leclerc, Hamilton, Verstappen. Having the start, we move away like this, and then Leclerc is overtaken in the first five laps. But he put it on pole and he kept them behind, Hamilton shorter than Verstappen, but he kept them behind,
He did lose. He kept the lead for, I think, four laps, and then he lost three or four spots in one lap, actually, of racing. It was pretty crazy. I don't know why, but all of a sudden, all cars, three cars caught up to him and passed him.
From what I'd understood, it's because the Ferrari was quite harsh on its tires, especially in the first half of the season. So while they had the pace, they didn't have the tire awareness to maintain it for long.
All right.
But the interesting thing that then comes is we have Hamilton ahead of Verstappen, ahead of Perez, ahead of Leclerc. And then Sainz makes a mistake and nearly puts the car in the wall. There's a yellow flag. Mercedes must be thinking, okay, we're getting the car in. There's a safety car coming. Call Hamilton in. He pits early. Red Bull keep Verstappen and Perez out. Gain track position, put in some good laps. Pit both of them. Perez has a bit of a mishap while in the pits, but both Red Bulls come out ahead of the Mercedes,
which was surprising to say the least. And it just seemed like there had just been a mistake, a misjudgment. Baku was also the race of the magic button. I'm going to call it if we're doing themes for occasional races.
What happened?
Well, I'll get to it in a sec. First, shout out to Leclerc, who two poles in a row, technically. So technically, that's pretty cool. In terms of Baku and what do I mean with magic button, which I kind of want to title the race around Vettel because he drove an amazing race following the fifth position he got in Monaco. But we get to the start. And I'm not sure how many laps are left to go exactly, but I think it's 15 or something around that. I think Hamilton is P5 or something, P3, something along those lines. And the way Formula One cars are built, you have a certain brake.
You're forgetting the whole reason why there was a restart.
Oh, I thought we were going to just skip that.
We can do it quickly. Tires start giving out and Verstappen crashes out.
Yes, bam, leading the race.
Perez leading Hamilton, leading Gasly, I want to say. And then magic happens. Go ahead.
That's funny. For some reason, I just left out in my notes that Max crashed into the wall completely.
Yeah, which was the big disregardful thing, right?
I'm sorry about that.
This could have been the title decider right here.
This could have, because Hamilton was quite far behind and Verstappen was driving a very solid race, and with literally no fault of his own, the tire blew out and he hit the wall quite fast. Then there was a nice meme which kind of went around with him kicking his tire So that could also be the theme of the race. Quite a lot going on. Easy to forget stuff. So on that restart, Hamilton, you know, one position up, I guess, now in total, is, you know, ready to take advantage here and fully go for it. And what does he do? He has had 54 straight point finishes coming into this race, I want to add. 54 straight, longest streak of any driver on the grid. Well, and the brakes are smoking when Hamilton is sitting, and right when the restart goes, the commentator points it out, and so it seems like the viewership is automatically focused on Hamilton's car and his braking. Well, going into the first left corner, he just goes straight, because I don't know the exact technological explanation behind it, but there's a button he thought he had turned off and then accidentally turned on again when he was switching gears that effectively disallowed his flexibility of the car and the braking. It basically inhibited the performance on that aspect, which sent him from, I think, third all the way back to last, which was very unfortunate for him in that moment. But again, another small error, and you can say if it was an accident or whatnot, but that didn't happen to Verstappen, at least up until this point. And not really, the magic button thing was really odd. So that, like the commentators called it a lockup, but there was zero lockup. He just went straight and couldn't really turn. So,
no, I mean, it was, what was it? I think in the end, it was a lockup, because turning the magic button on, or the magic is what the Mercedes team calls it. It's a system that transfers heat from the brakes into the tires, and Hamilton had left it on, whereas he should have turned it off, leading the brakes to overheat, I think, don't quote me on this. And then that made it so easy for him to lock the car up, because the brakes were essentially going, oh, no, can't handle this, just clamp it down.
Yeah.
Yeah, but massive, massive thing. Honestly, this was probably, all things aside, this was one of those moments where the championship was really decided, in my opinion.
Which is tough to say in one because of the closest seasons of all time.
Had Hamilton made, you know, had he gotten any spot but the one he ended up in this race where Verstappen was out, it would have been completely different.
Yeah, he could have gotten second on, like in Abu Dhabi, and not had a problem at the end of the race. So yeah, that wouldn't have been an issue. Absolutely. Like one of these cases, Monaco, Baku, you're like, okay. And Hamilton is such an experienced driver. He knows city circuits, you need good qualifying. And but for Baku, I want to give a special shout out to Vettel, who did profit off of Verstappen's crash, which was going to be Red Bull's first 1-2 in a really long time.
Incredibly long time, huh?
So I do put the blame on Red Bull for not taking care of the tires and having Verstappen go out. But Perez ended up winning the race, and Vettel, who was then in third and then after the crash in second, after the restart, held on, drove great. It wasn't given to him at all. And that's two consecutive races where he's put up very good performances. Also, who finished out the podium was Gasly. So a podium in total that you didn't really think would happen in that kind of constellation necessarily. Like, I wouldn't have tipped Perez and then Vettel and then Gasly. I don't think I would have tipped that for any race. So that was really the podium out of that race.
Yeah. And also shout out to Pierre Gasly for making the third there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think just to cap off Azerbaijan with something I wrote down, which I found quite funny. Which is, as far as Hamilton and Verstappen are concerned, this was a lose-lose. But everyone else won.
Yeah, although Hamilton got a tiny more... Oh, no, he didn't get any points. He ended up finishing, I think, 15th or 12th or something like that.
Yeah, he finished, I believe, last of all. No? Last of all the ones who ran and who finished the race in the end.
Goat Latifi finished 16th and Hamilton 15th. And then there was four DNFs.
Russell Verstappen. You see, that's where the crash in the final race came from.
Yeah. I was like, fuck you for overtaking me. I'm just gonna steer it into the wall.
which is exactly what happened, as we all know.
I think we're gonna need to cover Abu Dhabi really in this whole review. All right. Moving along.
I think France is quite a short race. I think if I had to pick a race that was the least interesting this season, it would be France. France only really had one thing going for it, which is Verstappen qualified first, fucked up the start, handed the wind handed the first spot to Hamilton. And then the race kind of progressed as it would, you know, challenging over time, and but never really kind of getting there. We saw it was a good challenge, but it didn't result in any real kind of changes in positions. And then Red Bull pulled something quite smart, which is the opposite, or which is essentially the same that Mercedes pulled in Spain, which is putting Verstappen on a two-stop and having him hunt down Hamilton, which he then promptly did. And that's towards the end of the race, made it really exciting as Verstappen overtakes Hamilton with a lap and a half to go on much fresher tires. Also because Bottas slips up defending. So another situation where Bottas wasn't the ideal wingman to Hamilton, not this time due to mistake, not to kind of blocking Hamilton, but comparing that to what Perez did in Abu Dhabi, you know?
Absolutely. For me, the Paul Ricard was a strategy battle, because it was clear from, I think, five laps in or so, drivers were already complaining about their tire wear.
Yeah.
And it was kind of floating around in the obvious. Basically, all the strategy predictions were that this was going to be a one-stop, and most cars were going for it, and it turned into a two-stop. And most drivers were able to feel and like say, hey, we should probably do two stops, which most of them in the end did. And one of the drivers who was saying it very early on was Bottas. And this became kind of another heated exchange that was going on between him and the pit wall, because he called it, they ignored him, and it ended up costing them quite dearly, because although Max gave them that great gift, Mercedes didn't end up pitting again, and that cost both drivers on their team points by being overtaken. And that's all I really have to that to add to your point. It was, you know, if this could have been a fairly exciting race in any other season, so it speaks for the season how exciting the whole season was, that this is the boring one. Because I mean, an exciting strategy fight is always always good.
And Paul Ricard is a track famous for how boring its racing is. So considering what we got this year, this was still my favorite race at Paul Ricard. It's just, you know, we can talk about a lot of things here, but the most important things are that Red Bull got the strategy right over Mercedes, which is the first time this year that has really happened.
Exactly. And like to add to the cost of how disappointed Bottas was and how clear he made it on the team radio, because of that undercut, Verstappen passed Hamilton and Perez passed Bottas. So it was really like a team on team kind of thing. And the podium was Verstappen, Hamilton, and Perez. Bottas fourth, Norris fifth, continuing his form. Like he, at this point, he's like one of the most impressive drivers of the year. Like, I don't know if you want to put it, if you rate best drivers or how you do it, if you do it on grades for a race, but he's definitely probably in my book, right close to Hamilton. I don't think there's anybody apart from Verstappen and Hamilton that would deserve to be third more than him up until this race, because he's performed very, very well and more consistently than Perez. Although Perez had the one win, that is true, in Baku, but that was less his own doing than it was Red Bull's doing.
Well, I mean, he still, you know, to finish first, you have to finish first, huh?
Yeah, but your teammate, who the whole team is centered around, has to also be out of the race.
Yeah, but he won the race, you know.
It's fair. I know, I'm giving him credit. But, like, I would have probably at this stage, although Perez got third, so maybe from this race on, but, like, Perez and Norris are battling for third best driver on the grid at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah. One last thing I do want to say is I wrote down that McLaren had a good finish here. And McLaren has been taking, McLaren is starting a charge against Ferrari again to kind of take a few points out of their hands after Ferrari scored really quite well in the city tracks.
Yep, they got P5 and 6, and Ferrari didn't get a point at all in this race. So that was a big jump for them.
Yep.
Ferrari, Sainz finished 11th and Leclerc finished 16th. I don't actually recall what was up with him, but it was probably boring. So let's move on to the Styrian Grand Prix, which is also the Austrian Grand Prix, but just because it was the same ring and they had to do it twice because of Corona, they decided to rename it, which was kind of funny.
And this for the first time is Red Bull. Well,
it's called the Red Bull Ring. Let's start with that.
Yeah, it's the Red Bull Ring. Red Bull are the clear home favorites. They've won here the past few years, especially with Verstappen. And after quite a few races where Mercedes were the home favorites or were the favorites, it's Red Bull's time to shine. And To be honest, they do. Starting grid for the first race is Verstappen, Hamilton, Norris. Just on Norris, these 2 weekends, he was fantastic.
Amazing.
Really strong. Ricardo was the one once again struggling and kind of pushing us through this thing that started happening from Monaco on, where Ricardo was lapped by Norris, which is that Norris as one driver is kind of fighting two Ferraris at the same time for a while here.
The thing is, when you look back on the season, Ricardo gets quite a bit of shit, but I don't think it was like the full first half of the season.
No.
At all. I think that's really unfair. No.
I think Ricardo drove a good season. He got good qualifying. He got good finishing positions. He was just not Lando Norris.
Yeah, and Lando just really outperformed his expectations too, which added to that, like, you know, misbalance a little bit. But yeah, well, Red Bull Ring, and Red Bull did dominate. Verstappen beat Hamilton by 35 seconds in this one. Yeah. That is also inflated because Hamilton pitted for the last, for the fastest lap, and ended up taking it. I think Perez was a little bit of a disappointment on this, just because Red Bull is supposed to be the favorite, so you would expect maybe him to beat Bottas to that third podium spot.
Yeah.
Reflecting. Norris couldn't keep his P3, but fair enough. Like, not going to discredit him too much for that. He finished fifth ahead of both Ferraris, as he just said. Also, an interesting fun fact, all drivers apart from the first four were lapped in this race.
Yep.
That's quite impressive.
I will say it's the shortest lap of the season. But yes, they were lapped. It was quite insane.
All of them apart from top four, which is just Mercedes and Red Bull. So very impressive. Just a couple notes I took. Norris, ballsy. That's kind of...
Yeah.
Holy shit, man. This dude just, I mean, packing out his sack and just, you know, keeping his car right where it should be. I mean, he had several good maneuvers and passes just in separate parts of the race.
Yeah.
Very, very impressive and consistent up until this point as well. Another funny kind of thing was, I think right before turn three, Gasly had a collision, not with one car, not with two, not with three, but with four cars. He ended up like bouncing back and forth between four cars. It was kind of funny to watch almost, because it was fairly low speed. This is also where I wrote down that I think this is the race where Ricardo kind of started falling off, and where the narrative really picked up of him being underperforming.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it was exciting from a viewership standpoint that Hamilton, you know, on the very last lap got the fastest lap. It's always a extra bit of excitement because you have one chance. Yeah. So did you have any other comments from this? Because, I mean, we expected Red Bull to dominate, and Verstappen dominated, and Perez did okay when, you know, held up his end of the bargain to most extent. So there's nothing really special I have to call out here.
Yeah, no, there's nothing much more to talk about here on my end. I think you hit all the important notes. Also, it's starting to rain in the background for me, so I hope that doesn't show up on the recording.
Oh, it's been thundering around me. So
yeah, oh damn. Okay.
You're fine.
Let's
unless
move
you
into
hear thunder.
Let's move into Austria 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Yes.
Styria no more. And quite similar to the first race, but this time the starting grid is Verstappen, Norris, Perez. And Perez is actually defending from Hamilton in the start quite strongly and puts on a great racing show until he gets pushed into the gravel by Norris, earning Norris a 5-second penalty.
That was the theme of this race for me.
Yeah. Yeah. 5-second penalties, pushing a car off track. It happened to Perez that he was pushed off track. Norris got a 5-second, and then Perez does it to Leclerc twice
later
in the race,
which
gets
is so
two
funny.
Separate 5-second penalties for it. I will say one thing I want to add on this is Leclerc put on some great racing until that happened the second time, because he really showed us how different trying to overtake someone using a different line can work sometimes. Because into turn four, I believe it is turn three or four, third right-hand corner, essentially, in Austria. Perez goes a longer line and follows the racing line, but Leclerc brakes a bit harder, turns in a bit harder, and then pulls alongside Perez and is on the outside going into turn at the following turn then. So either four or five, depending on how that all works.
Yeah.
And that's where he gets pushed into the gravel. But it really kind of shows how, depending on which line you take, depending on how you play with the angles of how you go into a track, and Hamilton did this too in one of the Styrian Grand Prix, in one of the Austrian Grand Prix, you can really kind of position yourself better into the corners that follow. And that's something that I think Verstappen isn't really doing. Verstappen commits to a line into one corner and then kind of sends it. Whereas we saw a few times with other drivers that you can also kind of outmaneuver the other driver on into a corner, stay behind, take your time, and then put yourself into a position through that, which, mind you, might as well not work because we don't see it work too often without someone being pushed into the gravel because Absolutely. You're going off the racing line.
It's an interesting concept because Verstappen doesn't, he'll send it and then not back down. And it seems like he doesn't care if he, you know, is out of the race or not, but he feels very confident in what he's doing. Whereas other drivers kind of go off maneuver a little bit. I agree with your analysis there. I want to say the clapping you just heard, I want to point this out because this was pretty impressive. I got bit by a massive mosquito where I have a big bite and I saw it finally. And the first time I clapped, I killed it. So that was fun. For the Austrian Grand Prix though, I have, of the notes I put down, most of them are around Norris again, because Verstappen, there was no real challenge to Verstappen in this race. So it was pretty clear cut from the beginning, but damn, did Norris make a hard on the Mercedes. Like, his total driving, the ballsiness just continued. He had a great defensive move on Perez. I think it was later on though, where the great defense continued on Perez. So they had some good battles. You mentioned the 5-second penalties. The one thing I think you strayed over, unless I overheard it, was Norris passing Hamilton. Yeah. And that was really well done. It wasn't an easy pass. It was in a, you know, he, as you said, he had to kind of change his racing line there. And you're racing against like a soon to be knighted person, like a guy who has so much experience in this sport. He gets like, you know, a knighthood. It's pretty impressive. So that he was able to, you know, probably one of his role models to hold against it and end up also finishing on podium again ahead of Hamilton, who got fourth, I thought was amazing. So I would have put probably Norris as my driver of the day for that race as well.
Yeah. And once again, Hamilton not making as many points as he should in a Red Bull dominated race.
Exactly. Bottas got second. So from Mercedes' point of view, it's fine, but you're looking for just imperfections. And Verstappen never finished third. He didn't, whenever he didn't crash, he finished first or second over 23 races. And I think he crashed twice. He didn't finish twice, which is mental. Okay. So Hamilton, here we had a case earlier where he didn't finish in the points and now he finished fourth. So there's more points as a gap there. And this was a 14 point gap because Verstappen also got fastest lap because he was so far ahead. It wasn't really an issue about fastest lap or not. Norris got third, as I said. Sainz got fifth. Perez got sixth. Again, not a strong showing for Perez over the Red Bull tracks, or not as strong as some might have liked or expected. Ricciardo seventh. McLaren doing well, because where did Leclerc finish? Behind Ricciardo in eighth. So I think Ricciardo's malperformance came up later in the season because Ferrari got stronger. But at this time, Norris is carrying enough that they're like, yeah, it's okay. We're McLaren and we're ahead of Ferrari and Ricciardo will get used to it. And we haven't really faced any consequences for this big difference yet. So ninth, Gasly and Alonso in 10th. That's where the lappings started. All cars 10th and below were lapped. Russell 11th, solid finish for him. Tsunoda 12th, Stroll 13th, Italian Jesus 14th, 15th was Raikkonen, 16th Latifi, and only Ocon didn't finish. Vettel ahead of Schumacher and Mazepin. Oh no, Vettel DNF'd, but the other two were plus two laps. That's an interesting order. So I guess they weren't allowed to finish the race, the Haases. Yeah. Interesting. Doesn't really matter. Not like
around what time did the COVID thing happen? No, that was later. That was in Hungary.
No. Latifi got 16, and then it says 17. Vettel DNF, 18. Schumacher plus two laps, then 19. Mazepin plus two laps, and 20. Ocon DNF. usually the DNFs are at the bottom. That's kind of confusing.
But okay.
Maybe they had too much. They'd been lapped too often so that they wouldn't have been finished in that, what is it, 2 or 3 minutes after the race finishes?
Yeah, I think it's that. I think if you end the race within a certain margin of the final lap being completed, you don't count as DNF. You count as X many laps behind. Yeah. Also, additionally, though, this is a fast track. This is a track where the champions are incredibly fast on a short lap. So they might have just been lapped twice.
Yeah, that could be too. Absolutely. I think previously, before we go into Silverstone, it'd be interesting to look at the Drivers' Championship standings again, where we have, remember, we've had two Red Bull dominated races, at least from Max's side, and McLaren has showed out, or Norris has very much so. So going into the Drivers' Championship, Max Verstappen, 182 points, Hamilton, 150. So there's a 32 point gap between those two in after these two races. It was a 4 point lead going into these two races. So, well, that's quite impressive. Perez is third at 104. So they are also currently leading the constructors. Norris is fourth in the McLaren at 101, which is insane. He's already past the 100 point mark. He outperformed his expectations by a mile this season. And most of the work he did in the first half, to be fair. Fifth, Bottas at 92 points, kind of sliding from where the other Mercedes at 150 is. He'd like to be in third, but it's still a close race. They're all within 12 points. Leclerc, 62, Sainz, 60. So the Ferraris, basically identical points-wise. Ricciardo at 40, which is definitely underwhelming. And Gasly, 9. And Vettel, 10, which is nice. And that's kind of also a result from Vettel's two impressive finishes, P5 in Monaco and 2 in Baku. So this next race will be the last race we're covering in our part one, and we'll do the rest after, but it's an exciting one, to say the least. The British Grand Prix.
Between Austria and the UK, an infamous line was set, which is, Verstappen could not finish a race and still be ahead. Someone said it. I think it was either Wolf or Horner. And
God, I hope it wasn't Wolf.
Boy, oh boy. No, I'm pretty sure it was. I'm pretty sure it was at least echoed by the Mercedes side.
Yeah. So how about you take us into it? Verstappen did not finish the race. We can start saying that. Spoilers.
Honestly, dude, I think there isn't a lot of things happened that race, but how many of them are really more important than that?
Well, I want to say that there was an interesting from the Ferrari point of view. So yeah. maybe we start this way. This might be better. Go backwards and say Hamilton finished first, Leclerc second, Bottas third, Norris fourth, again continuing, and it has home circuit. Great for him. Finished fourth. Ricciardo fifth. So great McLaren result. Sainz sixth, Alonso seven, Stroll eight. So Leclerc finished second, which I think was also his only pole of the season, podium of the season. And he had an interesting race because early into the race, he was facing power issues. And I think that's where he was in first because he was leading this race after an incident we'll get to in a second. And he had power issues. So they helped him and they said, okay, go to this default setting and it should be fine. And from then on, it seemed okay. And he did get caught by Hamilton, but he drove a really good race. So I'm happy for him and his finish there. That's about all the other stuff I wrote down because everything else I remember about this race are the 3 seconds leading to the big incident. So how about you take that one on?
So Verstappen starts ahead of Hamilton, which is, on Hamilton's home track, that isn't something you want to see as Hamilton. Hamilton fights him hard, but clean until a certain point. They go into a high-speed right-hander. Hamilton finds himself on the inside, kind of makes a dive, touches Verstappen's rear right, and Verstappen so spins slightly out and has a huge, huge crash. The race is red-flagged, benefiting Hamilton because he can repair his car in that time. And he puts on a stellar drive after that to still finish first and overtaking Leclerc towards the end of the race. McLaren put on a strong showing. Now, the controversy comes in the fact that Hamilton was in a position where you don't really overtake, and he went for the overtake. I'm fine with that. That's hard racing. Maybe he shouldn't have done it. Maybe he should have been smarter. Maybe it would have been smarter or prudent to wait, but he didn't. The thing is, the crash was quite impactful. It was a Verstappen was taken to the hospital after, and the team didn't tell Hamilton that he was in the hospital. So Hamilton drove around like he just won a Grand Prix and everything was fine. And Daniel, not like his closest rival, was just punted into the hospital by him. And you can't really fault anyone.
To be fair,
they apologized after, but
yeah, well,
it was a terrifying thing to see, is what I'm getting at. I think the most, and I think it's where the rivalry between the two turned.
See, yeah, that's the thing. This was the turning point of the season, because this is where narratives change, and this is from this point on, the teams were implying bad things about the other team when giving answers in interviews after this, and there was like, okay, all kind of respect or admiration we had for each other, fuck that, we're done. And it's funny how a lot of stuff comes back to miscommunication, which seems to be a trend in this season. And we haven't even gotten into the FIA really. But we look at this incident and just the numbers of the incident, right? They're going flat out when this happens. Verstappen, after the gravel, hit the wall at 50 Gs. Like, the biggest roller coaster you're going to find is going to be 5, maybe mm-hmm. 6, but like 50. It's insane. The speed and the impact. He was taken to hospital. He was fine. And I don't know why Mercedes didn't communicate this to Hamilton, because Hamilton asked, is he okay, right after it happened? Like, concerned checking in on him, which, you know, is nice. And I think most drivers do that in that moment. We saw it with Grosjean back then in the day when his car went up in flames. And I think this was less about the crash than the impact on the rest of the season that it did have. Like, it was a bad crash, but it was more about, okay, we're not playing games anymore.
Yeah.
Fuck this. And that's a good cliffhanger for next race.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that next time, I guess. Are there any other points regarding Silverstone you have?
Let's see. Did you already mention the whole fastest lap thing?
I know Hamilton got it.
No, he didn't. Perez got it. What Red Bull, Perez was running somewhere in, you know, low point scoring positions. And Red Bull said, no, fuck whatever Perez could do, you know, from the position where he's in. He's going to pit and put on soft tires and get the fastest lap, not finish in the points. So the fastest lap point wasn't awarded to anyone, but Hamilton didn't get it. I thought was such a petty power play.
This is very funny this is like a rule I learned along while watching, because you only get the fastest lap if you finish in the top 10. You only get that point. So if you finish outside the points, you can't get a point with the fastest lap. Does that mean you disqualify any other times, or is your time disqualified because you didn't finish in that time? Because the Google thing I have in front of me shows Hamilton got that point.
No, I'm looking at the classification right now, and it says fastest lap Sergio Perez, and he ended up finishing on lap 50, 128.6.
Well, you know what, Toby, it's not like this championship came down to every point, so let's just give that point to Hamilton. It doesn't matter. Let's just give it to him. Let's look at the championship after that final, or the 10th Grand Prix of, I think, 22 or 23. So we had Max Verstappen. He's still in the lead because, well, as you said, he could crash and he would still be ahead. He's at 185 points. Hamilton is at 177 now, so there's only an 8-point difference. Norris still keeping strong in third at 113. Even still, not an unreasonably sized gap to Hamilton at that point, but, you know, he's setting his expectations, and he's saying, yeah, I can finish third. Right behind him, though, are Bottas at 108 and Perez at 104 points. Leclerc and Sainz, this is probably the biggest difference they had for the almost remainder of the season between the two, but Leclerc had 80 points and Sainz had 68 in sixth and seventh respectively, and Ricciardo 50 points. So he had, you know, hauled some points back through a couple of good finishes. And the race between McLaren and Ferrari looked still very close, but McLaren was still leading that by about 10 or 15 points. Ninth, still Gasly. 10th, still Vettel. That is essentially where we're at right now. And I have no other comments for this first session.
Well, I want to just mention going back in time and thinking about these races I watched. I missed, you know, I missed something. I think I missed, actually, of these beginning few, I don't think I missed any of them so far. Actually, no, I missed the first Austria one, I think. It doesn't matter. What matters is that we were witnessing a season that was swinging big time. You know, we were witnessing a season that Mercedes won the first three out of four races, then Red Bull won the next. You know, fucking don't let me lie. Red Bull won the next. They won Monaco. They won Azerbaijan. They won France. They won Austria. One. They won Austria two. So they won the next good chunk. Then Silverstone happens, and we see a huge swing again. And we'll get into what happens next in the next session. You know, but at this during this time, we weren't seeing. You know, there wasn't a development war. This was just the cars being as strong as they were.
Which testing did not yield that kind of expectation about the season, that they were neck and neck, essentially, based off what they were coming in on the season with. And then there is slight developments that are made in the latter parts of the season, especially on Mercedes' side. Because I do think overall Red Bull came in with a slightly better car in
And then
retrospect. But hindsight is 2020.
I'd say it was 2021 this year, eh?
Good one. Yeah, so for at this point, I'm putting Verstappen as number one best driver. I think Hamilton's reputation was a little tainted because in that Silverstone accident, he had more room on the right side, and he could have gone a bit further right. And in total, I don't hold anything bad against him in terms of conduct because he's always conducted himself like an absolute role model. But I would put Verstappen, Hamilton, Norris, Perez, and I think Bottas fifth. I'm not sure where to put Bottas because he's always like a plus one to Hamilton, and you kind of just well, he has a good car and he's not doing terribly, and he had solid points. Sainz hadn't really impressed me that much. He had been consistent, but he hadn't gotten the occasional good score. And then Gasly was starting to show better and better results, and Vettel I still had fairly high up as well. Because he had two very good races, and you figure take into account that they're changing teams, but I guess we'll see how that develops further throughout the remainder.
Yep, and with that,
On that
back to the
bombshell,
studio.
back to the studio. Have you watched the new Grand Tour?
Yes, I have.
I
We're
have
not
not.
Carnage à trois.
Yeah, I want to
I think it's
on
pretty
French
funny.
cars. Yeah, okay, good. We can review that as well. We mention it next time. Great. Thank you so much for tuning in. And yeah, I think in a week or so, we will be revealing the next part of our F1 season review. And then, of course, we have a preview of the next season coming after testing, which I don't know when it's scheduled yet, but I think sometime in January, usually, or February. I guess we'll see.
March, I think.
March.
But
Shit. I was hoping
yeah,
to wait. I was hoping it'd be sooner.
you gotta go get your tires changed
I gotta go.
on
I'm gonna
your
do my
F1 car.
pit stop. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna go play some Formula One 2020,
Yes.
2021.
Yes. We should start our drivers or like team season
Yeah, that'd be
soon.
really fun.
I should get a steering wheel for it though. I'm almost like thinking about
Well,
it. I did get Christmas money, so maybe use it for that.
there you go.
Or a tire change. Awesome,
Or
man.
a tire change. All right, bro.
Have a good one,
Good
and
talking to you.
we'll
Good
talk
talking to you.
soon.
No. Talk you.
Bye.
Bye bye. Talk you. Love you.
Talk
Bye
you.
bye.
Talk you.
All right. Cheers.